It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. In this country, we idealize the lives of farmers. Good old-fashioned hard work, growing the food that feeds the world, spending days out in the fresh air and going to bed tired. And there is something to that, as many farmers will tell you. But on the flip side, farming is a stressful occupation with a unique set of challenges, physical, financial, and emotional. This hour, we'll talk about how the stresses of the job, Iowa's rural culture, and a lack of access to health care can combine to create dangerous situations that too often lead to suicide. Later in the hour, I'll talk with a researcher who's trying to understand this problem and people who are doing their best to help farmers who are struggling. But my first guest this hour understands these problems all too well. Jenny Peters lost her husband, Matt, to suicide just over 3 years ago. They'd lived together for more than three decades on their farm outside of Perry. Jenny, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I know this is a difficult story to share, and I appreciate your willingness to share it with us. The farm that you lived on with your husband was a family farm. This is a farm that had been passed down in his family?
Yes, that's correct. It was a century farm.
And how large was it?
Well, we farmed, when Matt died, we farmed about 1,500 acres. But we didn't own all of it, but that was the amount of acreage that he farmed.
Okay. And the two of you had reached retirement age. You retired from your job at the library in Perry, and Matt was also exploring retirement. But that's a very challenging time for a lot of farmers. What were some of the problems he was facing?
Well, we looked at retirement quite a few years prior to his death, and Matt was always a planner, and he said, you know, we need to plan for this so that, you know, that we do things correctly. We wanted to make sure that the farm was in good hands and that we could retire and do things that we wanted, always wanted to do. So we had actually looked at this for a very long time, and I retired in January of the year that he died, and then he died in the spring.
You have two children, and neither one of them wanted to take over the farm, right?
That's correct, yes. They were both, at the time that he died, they were adults and through school and had professions of their own in different states, which we encouraged. We encouraged them to do it, follow their dream, do what they wanted to do with their life.
So as you were searching for other ways to pass on the farm, I think for people who reach retirement age, it can be a very challenging time for a lot of people in a lot of different careers. But in farming, I think it's probably one of the most challenging, because not only are you looking at your own financial security, your own future, your own plans for the future, but you also have a relationship with this land that you farm. Was Matt concerned about what would happen to this century farm, this part of his family's history?
Right. That you've exactly expressed it exactly correctly. The farmer feels a real connection to the land. It's just a part of their life, and they've, you know, become intimately connected with it all the years that they farmed it. They think about the people who went before him, who worked so hard for it. And so he was very happy that someone else farmed where we were, if it was not a family member. But he was concerned about the person that would do that, that we wanted to make sure it was a smooth transition. So we did do a lot of planning for it.
Right. And from what I know about your story, it sounds like you did everything that you could to try to come up with a good plan.
Mm-hmm. We did. We thought we were on the right path. And honestly, the things that happened to my husband were so happened so quickly that I really only knew that something was very wrong on the last day of his life. It was a very quick downward spiral that just stuns me even today, how fast I realized that he was really in trouble,
right,
that last day.
Well, and I know you don't want to go into the specifics of what exactly was going on, but you had made a plan that you were feeling comfortable with, at least at the start, for passing on this land, and things started to go wrong.
Yes, and that was definitely a factor. And it just added more stress to what he was already going through. But there were other factors. I've had many wonderful people who have helped me through this, and I have realized that there are a combination of things that probably contributed to what happened, some of which I still don't understand. What really surprised me, I think, about all of it is that he didn't fit any of the typical predictors of that one thinks about when one thinks of suicide. Every time I looked at studies or people's lists of things to look for, Matt never fit it. He never fit any of them until I realized that he fit two. He was male, and he was a farmer, and also he was 55. That's another kind of predictor. That's a real growing group of, we think a lot about teenagers and how devastating that is for our young people to take their lives that way, but it's a big concern for the middle-aged person. And if they're male and farming, then those are predictors. So I just couldn't see, it just didn't fit together for me. Right. He was not depressed. There were no drugs or alcohol in his system. We didn't have any financial problems or marital problems. So I was just really at a loss as to what had happened so quickly and so rapidly to him. Some of which I think today, I really think a lot of it could have been chemical reactions, some chemical things that he may have worked with, some perhaps genetics. I just think that it's a field that hasn't been studied nearly enough for us to understand what really happened.
Right, and we will talk a lot more about that as the hour goes on, people who are doing research to try to understand this. From your perspective, again, he did not have a history of diagnosed depression, and from your perspective, no history of undiagnosed depression either. And
correct.
And in piecing together what happened, you see this downward spiral as taking place so quickly over the course of, what, 3 days?
About 3 days, and really only the last day. What I noticed was he wasn't sleeping. There was this really no sleep, and very, he told me, I remember he stood in our farmhouse and looked at me and he said, I feel paralyzed. And he knew that last day, he asked me if our health insurance would cover this kind of coverage, because he said, my nerves are shot and I can't think. And so he made an appointment to see our family doctor, and he also made an appointment to see Dr. Michael Roseman, who helps with agricultural wellness and the well-being of farmers. So we were making steps to try to get some help, and the sad thing is that we didn't get it fast enough, I guess. I mean, even though he went to the doctor that day, and it just wasn't to be.
Did he leave you a note? Did he try to explain what happened to you?
Yes, he did. He left. He actually left me a letter, a very long, two-page letter on legal paper, and very explicit, very detailed, and I showed it. I know I showed it to my family physician, who looked at me and he said, "Jenny, that's a love letter," and it was. It was very beautiful, and he said, he just explained that he had torment in his head. And I find those words, people that do have, they attempt suicide, a lot of times they will talk afterwards and say that there was this pain, this incredible pain. And he said, I just have this pain and this, he called it torment. I have torment in my head. And he also gave me very good directions on what to do with the farm, typical for a farmer, who should farm the ground. And then he left meticulous notes for this person of what had been done where, and maps and so forth, of so that person could take over quite seamlessly.
Wow. With a suicide, even if there is a letter or a note, the question of why can never really be answered. That's something that a person takes away with them. In trying to understand it and reaching out to others, you have found a surprising number of other women who have also lost their husbands this way, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And it's a real comfort to see someone, to look in someone's eyes, and they look in yours, and you realize that you have, even though you don't know each other, all of a sudden you know each other really well. And it's a great help to do this. But what I want to do is stand up for my husband since he can't, and to try to help the communities to realize how serious this can be. If you have a farmer who's anxious, who can't sleep, it's urgent. You need to really address it right away.
You also feel very strongly about how people talk about suicide. You don't like the phrase commit suicide because you want to take away some of the stigma of that as well. A lot of people take their lives, and that doesn't make
right.
them a criminal.
I think words are extremely important, and there are so few things in this world that are as have so much stigma as suicide does. So anything that we can do to help people to talk about it freely and comfortably is going to be great. And so from my personal perspective, and I don't speak for everyone, but I don't like the phrase commit suicide, because it implies that there was a moral wrong, that implies that there was a crime. And I feel that he died of this, just as if someone may have died of heart disease or someone may have died of cancer. I feel that my husband died of this and that it wasn't a crime. So that's my personal preference. And I also want to bring suicide out of the darkness, which is kind of a slogan for international survivors of suicide. They also have walks that are called Bring Suicide Out of the Darkness, which is a lovely phrase. We need to talk about it. This needs to be talked about so that we can make some progress about it, and we can feel like there was nothing shameful, that we shouldn't hide it, that it's okay to say that your husband, your father, your son died of suicide.
Well, Ginny, thank you so much for telling your story to us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Ginny Peters lost her husband, Matt, to suicide just over 3 years ago. They farmed together outside of Perry for many decades. This hour, we're talking about the mental health needs of farmers and the risks for suicide and even homicide. We'll continue our conversation this hour. I'll talk with Michael Roseman, who is a farmer and a clinical psychologist. He is also the executive director of Agri Wellness. I will talk with Wendy Riggenberg, who's been conducting research on occupational homicide and suicide in farmers and other agricultural populations. And we'd also love to hear your stories and your questions this hour. Join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.